providing you with the tools, knowledge, skills, and power to advance your career, grow your business, and build a better future for your community. We are the Tourism Academy. Welcome to Business Class.
From Australia to London, chasing the Olympic Games, finding great food and drink, and working to build a culture of inclusion, not only for his organization, but for all of us around the world and travelers alike. Today's guest, Paul Gauger from Visit Britain.
Coming up on this episode, I sit down with Greg Karen, CEO of the Philadelphia Convention and Visitors Bureau, where he shares his thoughts on mentorship, equality, and building a city that has gritty in its name. Stay tuned for more from Business Class.
Steve Ekstrom here, host of Business Class, the Tourism Academy podcast, where I get to talk to people who are making their living and making a difference in the tourism industry. Joining me today is somebody that I've been looking forward to talking with for quite some time, Greg Karen from the Philadelphia CVB. Greg, welcome to Business Class. I had to think about that. Rough day.
You know, we all have those moments, especially these days, where we forget who we are, where we are, and what we are. But thanks for having me, Steve. It's a pleasure.
How long have you been with the Philadelphia CVB so far?
So I'm one of those rocket scientist career planners that took on the role of the CVB CEO role right at the front end of the pandemic. My first official day on the job was June 7th of last year, plus about 30 days of shadowing my predecessor and working with our board chair just to get ready. So we were in full lockdown at the time I started.
That brings its own challenges, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, I'm sad to say, I know we have about 50 coworkers here at the Bureau, and I need to go back and look at our org chart. I want to believe by now I have met every one of them in person at least once. I'm not even sure that that has occurred just based on the environment that we've all been working in.
Looking back on the last year and a half, what has been a magical moment for you?
It's funny. Again, I made this career change after 22 years with my prior employer, and that may weave into the story a little bit in terms of background, but I was with the same company for 22 years. It was the company that actually manages the convention center for us here in Philadelphia. The company used to be known as SMG, and now their name is ASM Global after a merger. So it was a big decision. It was a big decision to make the move, and people talked to me a lot, including some of my predecessors in this same role that have retired, but I'm still close with personally. And the questions like, are you glad you made the move? Would you do it all over again? And when I think back on it, you know, the recruitment process started when all was right with the world. I think the first call I got about the opportunity was the very last day of January or first day of February of last year, and started engaging in those conversations, and really ended up being very personally vested and passionate about the role under what would have been normal circumstances. You know, very proud of the city and our convention center and what they built to date. And interestingly enough, one of the first Zoom meetings I ever had was my first interview. And my second interview was a hybrid meeting where the interview committee was, some of them got together in a very large room spread out in the convention center here, and some of them were on Zoom. And I always joke, maybe a smarter guy or gal might have run for the hills. And there was something about the moment in time and the reasons that I wanted to take this position on, especially in my own adopted hometown, where I've lived in this market for 25 years, that sort of had me double down and want to do it that much more. They had a great history in Philadelphia of doing big events like the DNC, the RNC, the Pope, you know, the NFL draft, and all these wonderful events. And again, I'm the fourth to take the baton from my three predecessors, all of whom I know personally and all of whom I consider friends. And if there's any guy that benefited, it was probably me, because the bar got reset pretty quickly in mid-March of last year, when it completely turned everybody's world upside down, but turned my job from taking a great thing and trying to find a way to make it greater and getting into survival mode and getting into funding mode and getting into how do I protect our team. And I guess the most important element for me, Stephen, was, you know, when I used to make presentations about what I did on the convention center side, when I represented convention centers, including the Pennsylvania Convention Center and then about 90 others, I used to start every conversation with the fact that it wasn't lost on me that tens of thousands of jobs, you know, rise and fall based on what we all do, you know. And the comment pre-pandemic was more about the cyclical nature of our business and whether we had, you know, 12 citywide conventions one year and 20 the next or vice versa. the fact that people's hours were impacted and their careers and their ability to feed their families. And I was always passionate about the fact that every new citywide convention or every new meeting, you know, put somebody else, you know, a hotel worker, a server, somebody building their career in any aspect of hospitality and tourism. And we were, you know, building their hours and building their careers. But it took on a whole new meaning when we all just stopped in our tracks and the industry basically shut down completely. And then I was struck not only by the fact that we used to talk about ebb and flow and cyclical nature, but complete loss of job and complete loss of income for tens of thousands of people in every market, not just Philadelphia, but around the country. As I joke, a smarter person probably would have run the other way. It wasn't any brighter to stay where I was. I mean, anybody in any aspect of our industry had, you know, suffered through the last 14 or 15 months. But I think what I learned is a sort of a depression mentality and how to survive and to look at our team. You know, I always joked my dad was born the year the Great Depression began back in 1929. And I think our family always blamed him for some reason, just because that's what family does. But when you look at the team of the CVB itself and you look at your peers and every hotel general manager and every worker in our space and say, what do we do to make sure that we survive and get through this and come out the other end? That was a rude awakening. But, you know, it's funny. I never used the words civic responsibility about myself. I use them a lot more about the people that I worked with because I worked in so many destinations around the country with my former role. And I would meet people that were either members of boards of directors or city managers or mayors or the various people that touch public assets like the convention center in any community. And I saw some of the, you see a lot of bureaucrats around the world and people that are just sort of, you know, doing the government job. But more than that, I saw people that were civil servants and saw themselves as that in the most meaningful, proper way. And they saw themselves as building the economy of their city, creating jobs for their people. I was never in this role or in an elected office or a government office, but those were always my clients and my partners. And I found myself using that word about myself now and giving myself that responsibility to say, all right, I've got to do my part to get these folks back to work and to help, you know, keep our city going.
What was it that you wanted to do or you set out to do when you were going through school and entering the workforce?
Sure. I probably come as close as you come to a textbook case. I mean, when I was a kid, I always joke, I was like a George Costanza from Seinfeld as a child. I always wanted to be an architect. And then I realized that there were things like calculus that were sort of worse than a foreign language to me. But I did in fact go to university for hotel management. It was kind of a family thing. My mom was a career travel agent. My dad was a manufacturer's representative, which is a very fancy way of saying traveling salesman. So we as a family always spent a lot of time on the road, either with my dad in his work through the whole Northeastern US or my mom as a travel agent going on, you know, either vacations and they were always work because you needed to see every hotel and check every attraction. So I was kind of born in a travel world. But that's probably what led me to hotel school. And unlike a lot of people, you know, I started not just a hotel school, but I started my career right out of school with a big hotel company. I started with, well, we thought we were big then. I started with Marriott in the early 1980s. And I think we had 165 hotels. We thought we were huge. We were the biggest hotel company in the world. And of course, that's a region for Marriott now. That's like an area manager's responsibility with all the products they've got. But I went through hotel school, graduated with that degree, and was lucky enough to get both an internship and have started my career with Marriott, which I still credit as probably one of the best first employers you could possibly have because they were so dedicated to their associates and to their guests equally. And so much of what I do, even for these last, you know, 30 some odd years, I can relate back to that. At some point I diverged just a little bit and I went to what we would call private expo centers, sort of converting, repurposing venues that were maybe old stores or warehouses and turning them into expo venues. They weren't the full service convention centers like our convention center here in Philadelphia. They were down and dirty, more for dog shows and home shows and boat shows and great community events. But they were, you know, if our building here is cost upwards of $1 billion at the convention center between its origin and its expansion, my buildings were $5 and $10 million bare bones shells, but they served a purpose. And that eventually led me to working with the largest company that ran the largest convention centers, that being SMG at the time. So there was kind of a natural progression from hotel school to hotelier to convention center. I guess I probably never really thought much about maybe ending up in this position. But when I first got the call, who told me my predecessor was moving on, and she's still a dear friend, I spoke to her earlier today. I thought about it. I mean, you know, a CVB is there to represent hotels, convention centers, and everything that services them. So it seemed like a natural progression. But for me, again, the most important part of it was, if the call had come in for anywhere else in the country, it probably would not have held interest for me because I wasn't really looking to uproot and move for that. But because it was within the city that I adopted as my home, my wife's hometown, because I knew so many of the players locally, including my partners at the convention center and a lot of the hoteliers and meeting planners, it just seemed organic because what we do represents all those interests. And I thought by virtue of what I had done in the past and having had the luxury of working with about 70 or 80 convention bureaus around the country in my former life, I got to see a lot of the best practices in CVBs from San Francisco to Columbus to Fort Lauderdale and all over the country.
What's something that you might say to your younger self as a piece of advice? Something you wish you knew at the start of your career?
Let's see. I mean, they start immediately with shut up and listen. They start with don't be such a wise guy. They start with all the things that my mom and my wife have told me my entire life. And look, those are life lessons we all have to learn. You know, I've always tried to live by the golden rule because that was one thing that I learned both as a child through my parents in school and certainly, you know, Marriott, everybody knowing sort of the Marriott family philosophy and how to behave and treat each other and treat your customers. But I've also sort of had a little bit of a smart aleck in me ever since, you know, grade school. And I think I would, I wouldn't tell myself not to do it. I would just tell myself to have a more finely tuned ear. And hopefully I've achieved a little bit of that over time. I think I would tell myself to listen to others more. As I did get older, I got a huge respect and appreciation for mentorship. And again, all these, I hate to say these things because they sound like buzzwords, but you know, whether people call them mentors or not, if I can look back to very specific individuals in high school, in college, and in my early career, and I can still point back to some of those names of the people that were the adults in the room and the people that were guiding me through either education or work. And I think that's the greatest appreciation I ever got, was whether it was somebody who really changed my life or gave me an opportunity or just gave me a nudge or a kick in the pants and helped me behave enough to do my job well and not get in trouble so often. I told my older self that I owed that back. And I try to, again, mentorship can be a one-time thing. It can be a lifelong thing. It really just is about the relationship between the mentor and the mentee. But I just have such a great appreciation for the people I've gotten to work with and peers, you know, people you've interviewed, you know, Elliot Ferguson and Martha Sheridan and Maura Gast, and just great, great partners who I've taken something from every one of them. And if I said shut up and listen, that's probably the number one, and all the other stuff just flow from there.
A quick reminder about the Tourism Academy, offering online, on-demand, and live in-person training so that you can create stakeholder alignment, demonstrate the relevance of tourism to your community, empower local businesses, and improve the local tourism experience so you can have more positive social mentions, longer stays, and more repeat high-volume visitors. Build a culture of inclusion while saving time and money with online tourism ambassador training and certification by the Tourism Academy, tourismacademy.org.
So you mentioned that you definitely have a crowd of people that you've looked up to and learned from over the years. Who would you say has had the greatest impact on your business style?
That's a great one. There's probably two or three. If I narrowed it down to the one, it would have to be a guy named Tom Connors. I mean, Tom was the guy who gave me an opportunity with SMG. He actually, you know, I ended up leaving the company holding the job that Tom held before he retired. So when I started with SMG in 1998, it was at one of their convention centers as assistant general manager. And I'd gotten to know Tom and other people with the company through the industry. Like a lot of the things that we do, we all create these relationships and everybody's like family. And I was literally out of work at the time. It just so happened that I was out of work at the time that a position came open there. And Tom called me up and said, look, we got an assistant general manager position for you at this building. We'd like to, you know, greenhouse you there and you'll be a GM, you know, sometime after that. And then lo and behold, I was the assistant general manager there for about a year and a half. And the company was going through a huge growth rate both organically and through acquisitions of other companies. And Tom brought me in as his lieutenant, his gopher, whatever you want to call it, and allowed me to shadow him and emulate, sort of be a mini me to him, because you can't be everywhere. And when I look at Tom, for those who know him, and I'm sure, I guarantee you that there are listeners who absolutely will know that name, I always say that there are areas of expertise that we all have that we can go down any one road and do it really well. Tom was the kind of guy that could talk about arts, culture, sports, professional, college, cigars, food, wine, restaurants, literature, you name it. And Tom could have an in-depth dialogue with anybody that was a subject matter expert in one of those areas. But the most important part was he had a style that was insightful. He knew to put his, he would always put his finger up to his mouth, as not to say shush to the other person, but I think to remind himself as a cue to listen and to show intensity of paying attention to what your conversational partner or audience was saying themselves. And I got to say, I mean, there were a number of other people that gave me great advice and guidance and counsel in terms of making, you know, building this person that I am today, good, bad, or indifferent. But Tom gave me that first break and gave me the opportunity to grow and flourish within the organization at a time it was just explosive for the next, you know, 20 years, to the point where I evolved to the point of holding his role after he left. And, you know, for that, I'm eternally grateful. And he's still a great, I talked to him just the other day, he became a grandfather for the first time. And, you know, I think we all have people in our career we can point to, and Tom would be that guy for me.
You mentioned something that I've heard from some of the other guests. In fact, I think it was Mike Gamble at Searchwide Global who said it was better to be interested than to be interesting.
Wow, great. Now, and I know Gamble pretty well. He is a dear friend and we've known each other for many years. And we actually, he did the search for my role here. We have a great relationship. And when I talk to him next, I'm going to ask him if he's got to attribute that quote to somebody, because I don't believe that Mike came up with him himself. I mean, I love it.
he mentioned it came from somewhere. So I'm not going to undercut, but he mentioned it to me. So
it's a much better way of saying that, the 80-20 rule, right? 80% listening and 20% speaking. But it is a more elegant way of saying it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one that definitely stuck with me. And I appreciate having learned that from him. What do you find most rewarding about the work that you do now? I mean, you already mentioned that sort of civic responsibility and seeing it come out from other people. When you get down to the nitty gritty of your daily task list, what do you see as most rewarding?
To me, what's most rewarding, again, coming from a world that was sort of a very, I always said my world before for the last 20 years was almost like a pachinko machine. If you know it's like a Japanese pinball machine where there are hundreds of steel balls bouncing in thousands of directions. And I thrived on that. I mean, there are people that thrive on dysfunction and running all over the world. And I was flying 130,000 miles a year. And it was wonderful. I was in China. I was in Panama. I was all over the United States. And again, I felt like though at a point where I was so not distracted, because I was focused on every place when I was there and every project when I was engaged in it. But this allowed me at this point in my career, you know, I'm certainly not sunsetting yet, but I'm closer to sunset than sunrise in my career. That's for sure. The fact that I have had the opportunity to just focus on one community and not drop in and out like a paratrooper. And I love that. Again, I love meeting the mayors of San Francisco and Detroit and Chicago and dealing with all those folks. It was very exciting. And I got something from every one of those relationships and opportunities. But to have the ability to just really sit down and say, all right, what can I do today to help benefit the city of Philadelphia, the greater Philadelphia region, and all of our various stakeholders? And, you know, I've sat on boards of many nonprofits, just like many of us. We all do sort of volunteer work, whether it's for a benevolent organization or a fraternal or a professional group. So I sat on boards before of nonprofits, but I've never had the fiscal responsibility of being the caretaker of a nonprofit organization. And my running joke for last year was we went from being a nonprofit organization to a non-revenue organization. And that's a really, really tough place to be, because there weren't a lot of places that just giving out money at the time and still aren't. But for me, that's been the greatest part. Again, the reasons I took the job were because I knew the players. I knew that the gentleman who's the head of the Pennsylvania Convention Center Authority, a gentleman named John McNichol, who was one of my best clients. He signed my contract for ASM Global to manage his building. He's now my partner. He's now my peer. And we changed the dynamics of our relationship. But the fact was that I knew who I'd be working with day in and day out. And that's probably, I've said publicly, that's half the reason I took the job. I knew a lot of the people here at the CVB, not everybody, but I knew a lot of them. And I cared about them. And we knew each other as industry peers in the same market. So it really was, it was very just organic. And then I think that's the part that I'm able to look back, even as horrific as the last 15 months have been for all of us, that when I think back to the reasons I took the position, and tough world as it's been, those reasons have borne themselves out. I have not looked back and said, gee, I took it for this reason and I haven't seen that or felt it. That's very gratifying, and knowing that we have, you know, life ahead of us and hope ahead of us, it'll be more gratifying the more we see conventions and go out on the road again and start meeting with our clients.
If you had to summarize Philadelphia in one word, what would you choose?
And this is a family show, right?
I mean, your family or mine, you know, could be different.
Could be different. You know, it's funny that the word that popped in wasn't a four-letter word. It popped. Actually, it is technically a four-letter word. So I'll tell you the end story before I tell you the word. You know, it was funny for many years, the professional hockey team in Philadelphia, of course, the Flyers, didn't have a mascot. It was one of the few NHL teams that did not have a mascot. And I don't know if you remember this. It made national news. It was only about 2 years ago that the Flyers set about to have a mascot created and designed. And if you look it up, this thing is a mess. The name of our mascot is Gritty, G-R-I-T-T-Y. And the word that I was going to give you is a four-letter word. It's grit. You know, Philadelphians, we are absolutely the city of brotherly love. And I can prove that by virtue of the fact that our vaccination rates are over 80% as a city. And our masking rate was noted by, I don't know how they study it, but Philadelphia was noted even last summer and forward as masking up. And to me, masking up is about protecting yourself. But as we've all learned from anybody who listens to the scientists, it's about protecting others. So when you think about what sometimes becomes hokey to hear the city of brotherly love, but when you think about the reality of people who truly are trying to be responsible and watch out for each other's well-being. But Gritty was this, again, people can look it up, is this fuzzy guy. He's a mess, but he is as determined as the word grit would establish. And it's funny because Philadelphia fans are not shy about their feelings of the day about visiting teams. And they're not shy on any given day about their home team if they're not doing what the fan is hoping that they would do, i.e. win. And funny thing about Philadelphia, when Gritty first came out, Philadelphians were not shy about saying, what the heck is this thing? And what are you doing? Until the world started to pick up, like Gritty was making news stories around the country, you know, with national news and national media videos. And when Philadelphians realized that Gritty was getting this huge notoriety and people were appreciating him, I do believe it's a masculine and Gritty, that they jump back on board. Well, Gritty's a winner. I love Gritty. Of course I love Gritty. Whoever said I didn't like Gritty? But I think grit is the right word because, you know, for many years, and Gamble is a great guy to reference because when Mike worked here at the Philadelphia CVB some almost three decades ago, and he was the VP of sales under Tom Muldoon, Mike said for years that Philadelphia was punching above its weight class. That was another expression I guarantee you he didn't coin. I got to believe it started in boxing somewhere, but he talked about Philadelphia as punching above its class and the redheaded stepchild between New York and DC. And that really is a thing of the past. I mean, Philadelphia has proven itself by virtue of hosting the papal visit, by hosting the RNC and the DNC, the NFL draft. We've got the Major League Baseball All-Star game coming in 2026. So we almost had to pull ourselves up and create more respect for ourselves as a community and as a destination to say, we're no longer that redheaded stepchild. We are a first tier destination. We've got a great international airport. Grit is what gets you there. Grit is what says that good, bad, or indifferent, I'm plowing forward and I'm going to make sure and do the best thing for my family, for my community, and for our destination.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about is diversity, equity, and inclusion. Philadelphia has one of the longest standing commitments to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and not just in talk, but in its own funding and the structure of your organization. How has that made the organization different? How has it helped you better serve the consumer?
It's a great question. I'm glad it's the closing one because it's probably one of the things that we're most passionate about here. And again, I got to give a nod to the historical context because, again, Tom Muldoon, who's long since retired but still in touch, still sends handwritten notes to our team here because that's how much he loves and pays attention to our efforts. So Tom helped create what was originally called the Multicultural Affairs Congress here in Philadelphia. And it goes back almost 30 years. And if you fast forward and think about some destinations and some corporations today that are still just thinking about diversity, equity, and inclusion as a new concept that they've got to start and grab a hold of and support, it's frustrating, actually, is what it is. But thinking about our strengths in that area and the fact that it was born out of this city and the city that has the history of, you know, the first convention was held here, was the Constitutional Convention back in the early 1770s. But to have the foresight to say, we are a minority-majority city, both literally and figuratively, a minority-majority being that the majority of people here come from various minority groups. We are not a homogenous city. We've got great neighborhoods and great communities of every type. And the fact that Tom and the team way back when saw that and said, this is an important aspect of who we are and what we do. And we need to communicate that in two ways, one within our own community and show support for an industry that served a lot of people of color and created careers for people that didn't have maybe as many opportunities. We always said the hospitality community or career was one that you could achieve a leadership or executive role. And you didn't have to have a four-year degree to do that. And you could work your way from a bellman to a general manager to a regional food and beverage director. So it is something that we as an organization and I personally take very seriously. And it was done, I think, I said two ways. Again, one was to engage and revolve around the community itself. But more importantly, it was done in such a way because our modus operandi as an organization, of course, is to bring events to the city. So the original mechanism was, how do we engage our diverse community to work with us to help market the community as a destination? And then how do we go out to the world and tell our story? And it is one of the most passionate aspects. You know, within our CVB, we have a PHL Sports is what it is. PHL Life Sciences that leans on the eds and meds that are another great aspect of our city. And PHL Diversity, which is the new name of what started as the Multicultural Affairs Congress. What is most gratifying about that is it has become, I think, a model for so many other destinations and organizations, such that, again, I joke about Mike Gamble, and he's not just a friend and a partner, but we actually partnered in the founding of Tourism Diversity Matters, which was his concept, and it came at just the right time for our industry. But he came back to his roots, and he and I worked on a way that we could be sort of a founding partner, given the fact that we've got this model in play here. It's not the kind of model that you want to keep a secret about. It's one that you do want to share. You want to remain competitive. We don't want people to take our business away, but it's the right thing to do as a community, and it's the right thing to do as an industry. So the fact that we've been able to help work with TDM and actually share now Greg DeShields, who heads up RPHL Diversity and heads up TDM, is really, really gratifying and really is very telling about our history in that area.
And Greg and I had a great conversation about that too. And the Tourism Academy has offered to use its technology and platform to help further that in any way that we possibly can. So it's great to hear where that comes from. I'm going to ask you to pick a number 1 to 10, and we're going to do a random card from the conversation deck.
I'm going to go with my lucky number 2.
I think you're the first person to pick 2. When was the last time you tried something totally new?
Wow. The day I started this job, 7th, 2020. I guess you could take it any way you want. You can talk about a food or anything else. And I'm a real foodophobe. I don't experiment a lot with food. For a guy who went for hotel restaurant, I'm about as vanilla as you find. I'm going to stick with that. You know, this was, I saw it as a natural evolution. I certainly didn't see myself as a traditional candidate when I talked about the role. I'm going to stick with June 7th, 2020 and taking on a DMO as the world was coming to a close and not having worked in one on a full-time basis ever before.
Well, is there anything I didn't ask that you wish I did?
No, you stayed away from what, if you were a tree, what kind of tree would you be? And what's your favorite color and all that hokey stuff. But I'm just thrilled to see what you do and have these kinds of conversations. And I know a lot of my friends and peers are people that you've spoken with in the past. They're great, engaging conversations. I just appreciate you having me along.
And if folks want to learn more about Philadelphia or get in touch with you or your team, how would you recommend they do that?
Sure. So the obviously generally the website, of course, is discoverphl.com. Give out my own email address, which is Greg with two G's, unlike Greg DeShields, my partner, Greg@discoverphl.com. And we try to be open and receptive regardless of who the asker is, whether it's a competitor. We talk to a lot of our competitive set cities, whether it's somebody that's completely in our space or completely out of our space. You know, we are inclusive in all ways. We really do try to be a public service to anybody that has an interest.
I want to say thank you for joining me here in Business Class. I look forward to seeing you on the road and out and about in your community sometime soon.
Thanks very much, Stephen. It's been my pleasure. I've spent a lot of time in Business Class on airplanes, first time on a podcast.
You did mention you're probably not flying as much, so be careful. Watch what happens to your status.
I'm all over it. Trust me. I'm putting things on credit cards that I would never put on just to make sure and ensure what it's standing I can for as long as I can, whatever it takes.
Well, thanks again. I appreciate you.
You bet, Stephen. My pleasure. Take care now.
Take a course. Train your people. Teach what you love. Promote your products. Donate today at tourismacademy.org, a 501c3 nonprofit organization.